this sense of like what it is like to like struggle against like the physical limitations of the world. That is just like, it's not the same as when you're doing, frankly, like software or people, right? Because it's like people, like you can always like this people, it's like there are no rules. As long as you can convince someone of something, it can happen. And like software, like vaguely similar, right? Where it's like, it's like you can kind of convince the computer to do anything as long as you're
That's right.
clever. Outside of that, you can't convince atoms to do, like you just like straight up can't.
Running into walls.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the DeSci Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Ben Reinhardt. Ben has spent the last years building PARPA, a private research institute modeled after ARPA, the US government's Advanced Research Projects Agency. Ben's organization has now been launched as Speculative Technologies. For this conversation, I wanted to focus on a piece of Ben's writing titled Grants Only Go So Far. The piece addresses some limitations of grants, at least if they're seen as a structural solution for speeding up innovation. We discuss what Ben sees as the illusion of change in reforming science, whether too much of meta-science coverage underrates the role of institutions, and how the difference between small and large grants is not only a numbers game. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy our conversation. So Ben, for this conversation, I'd particularly like to speak about a post you wrote titled Grants Only Go So Far. As the title suggests, the piece addresses some limitations of grants, at least as if they're seen as like a structural solution, say, for speeding up innovation. We'll discuss those limitations, I hope, but also use the piece as a springboard into like broader meta-science questions that the piece in my read, at least, was like getting at. So first off, what struck me in this piece was a certain emphasis on the character traits of funders that are required for effective science efforts, like put your money where your mouth is, go out on a limb for promising individuals, and so on. So on the theme of cultivating effective innovation enablers, what would you say are some of the characteristics of good funders? And are there like historical examples that particularly come to mind for you of people that embody these like progress enabling virtues?
Almost? Yeah. Actually, can I just like answer the latter? Like I think,
yeah.
Like let's go from the specific and maybe like pull out some traits. But so I think like Warren Weaver is like the like one of, if we're thinking about funders, so if we're thinking about like funders in the like grant sort of sense, right? So I'm like putting aside funders who are doing things kind of beyond grants. So like we're putting aside JCR Licklider and Ivan Sutherland and like DARPA PMs, because I would say that they're different in a sort of structural way. But like of the people who like work are kind of like the funders that we have now, I think Warren Weaver is I think I'm getting his name right. The paragon. And he was at the Rockefeller Foundation in the, I believe, the 30s through the 60s. And he's basically responsible for molecular biology becoming a thing. And so he basically sort of noticed that there were a few people who were starting to apply physics ideas to biology. And he was like, oh, like this could become a thing. And so he started funding these various different efforts. And he turned around and went to the board of the Rockefeller Foundation. He was like, hey, if we're going to do this, we need to do it right. And if we're going to do it right, you need to put a lot of money into this, and you're not going to see any results for at least 10 years. And you're not going to see any impact for like 20 years. And like you, like, and he like went to them. He's like, you need to commit to this, right? Like you need to commit to this 20-year journey to make this happen. And like, so he won, found like And he went and he like found people that he trusted and like funded them for this long duration. So
Yes.
like I think some things that we can see there are like one, he like didn't need a whole lot, like he sort of put his faith in the people doing the work. Two, he kind of like committed to it for a long period of time. And three, kind of like acted like a the can I curse on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he acted like a shit umbrella, which, like, so he turned around and went, like, it's like there's always a bigger fish, right? So like he turned around and went to like the board of the organization and like went to bat and was like, look, like you just need to like chill out for 20 years. So anyway, so that there's a story that I think sort of like hints at what makes good funders.
How many people, like key decision makers, did he actually have to convert or like manage throughout those 20 years that like actually kind of like had the strings in their hands, like they could have like had the program and did not?
I that's a good question. I don't know the exact numbers. I don't know how many people were on the
Like
board.
it wasn't like an assembly of like dozens of people. It was like a few like key
I
people.
yeah, I think it was like on order dozen, like I like but like this is we have reached the limit of my knowledge. I don't know exactly how many people. It was it's like more than three, but like less, probably less than 20.
Yeah, that's the kind of like sense that I was trying to get. Like it's not like a huge haul. How would you then say like supporters that are interested in kind of like coming up with new grants initiatives nowadays might like work on themselves before working on the world, say? Like, what is the shift of traits and worldviews then that to you would enable actual change in like the Weaver-esque way?
So, can I ask just like a clarifying question in the sense of
Absolutely.
like who are we talking about? Are we talking about like some billionaire who wants to start a like start doing philanthropy? Are we talking
Yes.
about someone doing like micro grants? Like what sort of person are we talking about?
I would especially be interested in the ones that are actually looking to not only set up like a micro grant program, or if they are, it's not like a side project. It's more like, oh, they want to like deploy big amounts of capital throughout like the next few decades. Like it's a long-term kind of thing. So I would say
I
like
mean,
the tech billionaires especially, yes.
I think part of it, like how to like I don't know how to I think there's this mindset shift of sort of needing to understand the either needing to like really be okay with trusting someone who understands like the time scales and sort of what good research looks like, or like learning to recognize that. That it's just like I don't. It's not like a failing to understand that. It's just like this it is like a type of knowledge that you can't immediately have. And so I mean, the issue that I see is that there's a lot of people who are extremely successful in startups and business, and there's a certain mindset that makes you very good at startups and business, and that I admire the crap out of that. But that same mindset, when applied to research, tends to be an issue. And so I think it's like that sort of like mindset shift, like almost like is it like I don't know quite what to say. Like it's like either building up research taste or being like really okay with like actually delegating of like pushing the decision level down to someone who does. Because what like because like the failure mode is that someone either like one is like oh like the pitch for this research just like I'm not excited after 30 seconds And like that's perfectly reasonable when we're talking about startups. Is not reasonable when you're talking about like actual research. And then similarly, like, oh, you like, you know, it's like you haven't been hitting your milestones. We're going to cut your funding. Again, completely reasonable when you're running a startup. It's a just a very different situation when, like, depending on the flavor of the research, So, that's sort of it. It's this is very hand wavy, but like maybe it's like the thing to do is just like hang out in some research labs, like really, like, you know, it's like there's a bunch of researchers, like very good researchers, who probably love to have like random interested tech people who are interested in funding research is like come hang out, like understand what the process is like,
and to build that, like, I feel like a lot of the getting scientific taste has to do with like just spending time out in the wild, like kind of being among people, or like gathering all that tacit knowledge that is like not
exactly. I mean, like, I think the best way to do it is doing some research yourself, because then like you just like there's this thing that like that's hard to replicate of like this sense of like what it is like to like struggle against like the physical limitations of the world, that is just like, it's not the same as when you're doing, frankly, like software or people, right? Because it's like people, like, you can always like this people, it's like there are no rules. As long as you can convince someone of something, it can happen. And like software, like vaguely similar, right? Where it's like, you know, it's like you can kind of convince the computer to do anything as long as you're clever enough. But like outside of that, you like you can't convince atoms to do, like, you just like straight up can't.
Running into walls.
Yeah.
Would you say that's like the key insight, or like the key kind of shift from say software to, or like business in general to science, like the whole, like, how malleable is your reality, or like how malleable is the reality that leads to success that you'd like to change?
Partially that, but then partially like then taking that and applying it to like doing things that nobody has ever done, but like that are like, it's like truly unclear if it will work, right? Where it's like again, like there's like one mindset where like where you've like you're like, okay, like we're up against reality, but like I know the rules of reality, and like I'm pretty sure that we like we can do this, like we could build this bridge, right? Versus like, can we build a bridge out of carbon nanotubes, right? And it's like the answer might just be no.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Another point you raised that I found interesting was kind of that of the social and financial asymmetries between grantors and grantees, and how that could negatively impact kind of coordination and grant making. If you still remember writing that and have thoughts on that,
Sorry. Can you say the first part one more time?
The like social, like in the piece you mentioned, like social and financial asymmetries between like grantors and grantees, like status asymmetries, like the grant maker having a lot more status or like, more capital than like the person that they're making grants to. Could you just like expand on that? Because I found that an interesting like observation that I haven't found in a lot of other like other sciencey pieces.
Well, so I'm not sure, like, it has been a while since I wrote that, and part of the reason that I write things is to get them out of my head.
But, all right.
So like what like this, like, put me back on the rails if this is not right, but like I think something that we don't think about enough with grants is that at least for grantors, like if you are a billionaire and you fund something wacky, like it can, there's actually a downside risk where, and like you see this, right? Where it's like, oh, like, you know, it's like some journalist goes in and is like, oh, like this billionaire funded this thing. It's like either like I think this is not in the case of grants, but like a really good example is like people were jumping all over Sam Altman for funding WorldCoin. Right, because they're like, oh, look, he funded this thing. It's like taking people's data and like, right. And so, like, there's actually like this reputational risk for grantors, and like, and so it's like they sort of have more, a lot more status to lose, and so that's like a kind of like a very rational reason for them to be risk averse about like putting their reputation on the line for things. And it's kind of less so, I mean, like to some extent it's the same for startups, but somewhat less so because like the whole, almost like the a large, like if we're being like really sort of, I don't know if this is Straussian, but like a big reason that people give grants is like for status, right? So it's like you're actually like you're betting your status almost. Whereas with startups, it's like, you know, it's like cool, like, you know, they were like, they make a bunch of money. Also, like the other thing is that like startups that make a bunch of money tend to get praised regardless of how ethically they do that.
No, that's right. Yeah. And if you're like funding a startup, like, yeah, you always have the, oh, I'm just doing it for the money to fall back on.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, a grant is like, people are like, oh, like, this is what you think about the world.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Precisely, yeah. Also, what I found in the piece was, like, an interesting consideration of, like, the qualitative and quantitative differences of, like the shifts that occur kind of when we move from like smaller grant sizes to larger grant sizes.
Yeah.
It's not only that like different grant amounts determine how much of a given thing a researcher can do, but they might also the very like nature of what the researcher is doing in the first place. Could you speak more to that, like difference in kind between small and large grants and how that should inform our thinking about grants?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess it's a thing, like, I think it always gets simplified when you just think about like if you were the person receiving the grant, right? So it's a, for example, like if you gave me like I don't know, like $5,000, like there's not like that like maybe this is arrogant, but like this is like that wouldn't make a material difference in like what I am able to do versus not do. Like, like maybe like if I need like a piece of equipment or something specific.
Yeah.
But like, if you actually like want to change someone's trajectory, like there's like different amounts of money. And then similarly, like there's a very big difference between the amount of money you need for like one person versus the amount of money you need for a team. And like it's like even bigger, it's like even bigger than like just literally the amount of money, like just like take some salary and multiply by X, because once you have a team, then you're like responsible for the team, and you're not just like when it's yourself, you could be like, all right, cool, like I'll go out on, like I'll go take a risk, you know, I don't know where, like how I'll pay rent in a year, but like that's fine, I'm cool with that. It is very hard to have a team where you're like, hey, I don't know how all of you will pay for rent in a year, right? So so the money doesn't just buy like things going on in the present, but like it changes like how people see the future.
Yeah.
And like if you know, like, and you'll do very different things if you know, like, oh, if we don't like get more money, like we're gonna need to get more money in a year, then you'll like target things that can get you more money in a year versus if you're like, oh, we don't need money for another 5 years, you'll target very different things. So like that's, so there's like a lot of dynamics there at play, and it's not just like, it's not some like linear, it's just like, it's just very non-linear.
That makes a ton of sense.
The amount of money.
Yeah. Something else I saw was kind of an awareness of, for lack of a better term, the illusion of change. Like Feynman famously talks about the ease with which we like fool ourselves. And in the piece, I saw some criticisms that kind of reminded me of that caution. Perhaps to start us off, like you characterize progress articles, like it's time to build, or we need a new science for progress, as missed opportunities. Why is that?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, this is... let's see. I'm criticizing people that I have a lot of respect for now, but It's like
we keep that in mind for all of this conversation.
Yeah, when you like those, they were missed opportunities because like they really acted as a rallying flag. And I guess like I think that decentralized coordination is great. Like I am like really a fan of it, but I think that it is strictly less effective than like having some kind of centralization. And I feel like those articles were really a way to like start coordinating people instead of just sort of like encouraging people to coordinate themselves. And so I feel like there could have been a lot more that came out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, and like, but like, to be fair, like that like probably wasn't the intention, right? The intention was to like give a whole bunch of people like encouragement to sort of like go in many different directions and like just like in some like general direction. I guess like that's really it. It's like, is it like a focused, like,
right,
is the like energy that's unlocked by a call to action like that, is it focused or unfocused? And like all the energy that came out of that was unfocused, and I feel like there was a missed opportunity to focus that energy more tightly.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like that's a choice. That's a choice, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. There's kind of a connection to that, and I would say like counterfactual impact, which is something that I feel like you portrayed DARPA to have really done, and like research management in general. It's like, I will actually quote you. You're saying the reason DARPA works is not because they are exceptionally good at picking projects to fund. It's because they use the money to incentivize projects that otherwise would not be considered and coordinate between them. It is not a funding organization. It's a research coordination organization. So DARPA focusing and funding counterfactual research. What might that look like in terms of like meta science? What could have come out of like a more focused, like it's time to build or whatever? Like, is there anything that you would think of, like that you were wishing for that did not happen in terms of like concrete institutions or like organizations?
Yeah, well, I mean, counterfactuals are hard, right? I mean, to some extent, like, so I think instead of, it's like, yeah, these counterfactuals are like really, really hard. And like, to its credit, like Patrick did start the ARC Institute, right? So I think, you know, it's like Mark Andreessen could have said like, and as time to build, I'm starting like the like Mark Andreessen, like infrastructure, like amazingness organization, right? And like people would have flocked to that,
yeah,
right? And you could have had some combination of like policy people who want to like get things out of the way, and it's like and it, like combined with people who are like actively building stuff and like doing research, and like you could have like something where like under one roof you have like both of these people and they're like really working together. And like you could say like, oh well, like aren't there people doing kind of like building research? And it's like, well, yes, there are. Aren't there people like Institute for Progress who are like kind of trying to work on this? It's like, well, yes, this is the like very distributed effort. But like frankly, like I think that like we like all these groups could be coordinating much better. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's like we try, like I try to, right? Like, you know, it's like I talk to Caleb, right? And they're awesome. Yeah. And like if they need help, I like try to help them. But like at the end of the day, like I'm trying to do my thing, they're trying to do their thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no like reason for us to do more than that.
Yeah.
But if there was something where like at some level of coordination,
mm-hmm.
you're like, okay, you're all like someone's like, oh, like you should talk to each other about this, like this is a thing you could work on together, like, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's just like someone keeping track of all the efforts that are happening and kind of like connecting people to each other? What kind of form would that take on, actually?
Well, more than that, like, that's the thing. It's like not just like keeping track, but like sort of like having everybody sort of like ready to go and sort of say like being like, oh, like you two should work on this together.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. And like not only should you two work on this together, but like here is some money to go do that. Yeah. Right. And like that's what I mean by like it's like a much more aggressive thing than just
like a definitive yeah
like almost like seeing opportunities that the people like lower down can't see.
Mm-hmm. yeah
right, like we're all like have our nose. Yeah
I was just going to ask, like, is there any kind of agency that you're aware of, like any kind of organization that could be like an analog to what we're lacking and like say like the meta science efforts more broadly
in the met, like
is that just DARPA in a
like,
way
like yeah like I guess I'm not sure what it means to do it in the like that would be like meta science, right?
And just like someone that comes like knows what people are working on, like finds interesting opportunities and like allocates capital to be like work on this together and I will provide the money.
Yeah. I mean like Tom does that to some extent.
That's right. Yeah. He does come to it.
So
you just need more right, Tom Khalils.
Yeah, I want Tom Khalil with like more power.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? Like that's yeah right. But like they're yeah beyond like I mean I think Tom is the closest thing.
Yeah. So going back and like focusing on grants explicitly as like a format for science reform, for some, what would be like the strong case that you can make for grants per se?
Oh yeah, look, the strong case is very strong in the sense that like the people who know what research is important are the researchers, right? Like and like that is what grants basically say, like you tell me like what you should be doing and then we'll give you money to do that, right?
Yeah.
And like that's a very strong case, right? Like there's like I mean read like Donald Braben, right? And there's a very strong case that in fact like grants should be less opinionated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So and the, like scientific freedom is like very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there is a quote from a piece that's like someone says I want to do this and the grantor says, okay, here's the money to do that. And then you say put a bookmark here. This contract is also where the limits of the granting approach sneak in. So what is problematic about this kind of situation? What do grants then miss?
What do grants like? I mean, it depends on the work, right? But mm-hmm. I think one thing is that grants, I guess, like they don't lead one they don't lead to a lot of thing outside the specific scope of the grant, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, if like it is a component, right? Like if someone wants to work on something that's like a component of a bigger system, there's like nothing that there's no incentive to go and actually build that bigger thing. There's the fact that people propose grants that they think can get funded, mm-hmm. which is right, like
expectation.
Yeah, exactly. Which sort of like warps the whole thing towards whatever is sexy. Mm-hmm. I think another thing about grants is that it's like, okay, like they don't address anything about like what happens next. Mm-hmm. So unless, and so like this is particularly my criticism of like what I would think of as like catalytic grants. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're like, oh, I'm like going to fund you to like do this, like this weird new direction or like change roles or whatever. And there's like Michael Nielsen has this amazing concept that he calls the shadows of the future, right? And so the issue is that like we plan we don't just have a time horizon that ends at the end of the grant. So you're sort of saying like, okay, like I got this grant, I'm gonna do this thing, but like while I'm doing it, I'm thinking about what happens after this grant ends. And so that those like the shadows of the future like warp that as well.
Rebecca thinking of how to pay rent and how to pay for rent for the entire team.
Yeah, exactly.
If you'd have to like come up with a like sympathetic and maybe a more like critical interpretation of why grant making programs have proliferated like they have like in the last few years, what might they be?
Oh, I mean, it's like it's easy, right? It is like A, it's easy, and B, nobody ever got fired for doing grants, right? Like it is I'm thinking of like some recipe, but it's like ordering pizza, right? Like nobody's ever gonna get mad at you for ordering pizza. And so like grant like with grants, you basically like you don't need ideas to have grant to do a grants program. You just say like, look, I don't have any ideas. I have some money. Come give me some ideas. I'll give you money. Great, easy peasy. You don't need to have ideas, and you don't need to decide on an opinion a priori. You just kind of get to sit there and like, and so like, yeah, like that's the like cynical take. And also just like everybody. And then also it sort of is very justifiable, right? Because you then say like people like, hey, come justify your thing to me. I can turn around and justify it to whomever else. It's very like, yeah. So it's like it's the way that it's both like I think one of the easiest things beyond like a lottery, and it's extremely justifiable.
What might be, just for balance's sake, kind of the more sympathetic take on
Yeah.
why they have proliferated?
Well, I mean, like to the earlier point that, like, you probably don't have the best ideas, right? Like, so it's like actually like you want the ideas from the people who have like wild and crazy ideas that are going to execute on them, and if people are executing, like, if it's a thing that someone wants to do enough to like write up a grant proposal, they probably really want to do it, and like their incentive, like it's their idea and they have ownership over it, and that's really great. And then it's also like fairly low, it's like one of the lowest overhead things, because it's like you don't need to pay people to go and like do analysis and like right, like you don't need to pay program managers to like fly around and visit labs and blah blah blah. You just are like, hey, send us the thing, like you can have like volunteers, so like very low overhead. And you can turn grants around, like you can get things done really fast. Like fast grants is like it couldn't be d fast grants could not be that fast if it were not grants,
That's right. That's right.
right? So yeah, like I think I'm really I, like what I'm really not saying is that grants are bad. What I'm saying is that grants have limitations, and I think on the margin we need fewer grants and more other stuff. Am I allowed to make like that kind of nuanced point?
No, absolutely. That's
Okay.
really it's an important one. Do you want to highlight some other stuff that you're particularly excited about right now?
That I am excited about right now, like in the context of grants and not grants, or just like the
And not
world.
grants, the like alternatives to other more
Oh,
grant programs.
well, Speculative Technologies is launching on February 15th.
That's exciting.
We're
Yeah,
doing
we'll
we're
link that
like
down below.
public. What's that?
We'll just link that, I'm just saying, down below
Yeah.
too, and like the show notes and
Okay.
all that.
So that I'm excited about that. Let's see, other things besides what I mean, like I'm like Convergent Research. I'm very excited about what they're doing. Let's see, what other not grant things? I mean, like Aria just spun up. That's super exciting. ARPA-H is potentially doing things. I think the yeah, but I'd like to see like even sort of more experimentation. Like frankly, even we are like not being that crazy. Like it's like okay, there's the ARPA model, but like that's like kind of been proven out at some level of abstraction. So it's like really like figuring out. I mean, yeah, like so some people propose, what is it, like research. I'm forgetting the exact term, but prediction market for re like prediction markets for research where people like buy like shares and then you eventually have philanthropists. And like I think that there's a lot that I would have to say about the specific implementations that people have proposed, but I'm very excited about just like that experiment, right? Like saying like okay, like could we do something where it's like not just grants, but like people who are proposing things and like somehow people sort of like invest in it. I think like that, like as an experiment, I think it'd be really good.
Moving away from just grants, to kind of, you have encountered a lot, as I understand your trajectory, like the public and private sector. Like, I think you were in academia before, like kind of starting out and like trying research organization, but like often working with people in the public sector. So you've gotten kind of views of the insides of both academia and industry, interacting with both sides. What are some of the common misunderstandings of the two sides, that you wish, were kind of remedied? Like, what do you
Like
wish both?
that they have about each other, or
Yes. And like, what would you wish they would like realize about each other?
I mean, it's like the biggest like from inside academia, I think like realizing that like industry is not like a monolithic thing. It's like industry means not academia. Where it's like
Everything.
okay, like it's like so there's a very big difference between like a startup and a big company and like doing like engineering at a big company versus working in a corporate lab. So that's like that's one thing. I think another is like for academia is like a lot about like what transitioning technology and knowledge actually entails, that it's not just like oh we like got a patent so we can start a company and just go. So like I wish I just understood like on the margin, academics should like learn a little bit more about like sales and how that works. And then on the margin, people at startups and in business should just like understand how research works, I think. I think like that's a big one.
Have there been interesting like differences of opinion between you and like other research coordinators, maybe at like, you know, ARIA and like other kind of places that try alternative models for like managing research, with relation to especially how do you best kind of structure research orgs and like processes? Like, is there any like thing that you keep on running into that you kind of see differently as other people?
I think at the level of abstraction that we so maybe like one sort of slider that you have is like ideas versus people, right? Like that's kind of like a big slider. And I think that I'm like slightly more towards ideas than like I think that like people are really, really important. But I think that like you could have I don't quite buy the fact that you can have like a really good person with no ideas and like it'll be okay. Like I buy that in the context of startups, right? Like I think that if you are like really, really good at executing, you just like iterate super fast. And like I think that like and I've seen this, right? Like where it's like people could just like be like, I'm gonna do this, and you're like, that's crazy. And then like, you know, like 5 months later, they're doing something completely different, and then it becomes worth like hundreds of millions of dollars, right? But like I think that research is slightly different because I think again, you need a little bit more background. So I think it's just like there's a slight So that might be one difference.
Suppose like a related question and apply to academia. Have there been interesting like differences of opinion there between you and academics that kind of more relate to academia's shortcomings per se?
Oh yeah, I mean, like plenty. I think a big one that comes up, and again, this all really depends on like what flavor of research you're doing, right? So it's like I think there's one thing that I want to flag there, but I think in the context of doing research that you hope becomes a powerful technology, right? So like let's scope it just to that. I like believe very, very strongly that you like even if you're not like building a product, you need to be targeting a serious context of use. And like I stole this term from Andy Matushak and Michael Nielsen. I steal a lot of things from them. That this idea that like this thing that you're making, like even if you don't like have a huge justification for it, you should still like be targeting like someone who is going to be excited about it, and like you need that feedback loop, because like I think that like frankly like most academic technology development actually does build things that are useless, and the sort of like the way that you make something not useless is to like try like really be thinking about that serious context of use, and so I think like that's a big difference.
And
And it
from,
yeah oh
yeah,
sorry
continue,
oh the
sorry.
one other sorry the one other thing is also like and this is just like I think this is like the whole game in when you're like publishing is that you want to be publishing something new, right? Like that's what the whole game is. And what like I think that the irony is that building new technology often getting a new thing out into the world often involves a lot of work that does not look that new, right? Where it's like people are like, oh, like someone's already done this, you're just scaling that up, or like, oh, you're like putting these components together, right? And it's like that's not really that new, but like that's the important work.
That's right. But it doesn't get you tenure. From your impression, what are the kind of Chesterton fences that we should be wary about when we're thinking about reforming science funding? Like what apparently like burdensome processes might exist out in the world that actually serve like a valuable kind of
Well,
like purpose.
I think a big one for me is grad school. I think everybody sort of like it's like I think in our community a lot of people are like, oh, like you don't really need grads, like why do you need to go to grad school? Like what's the point of that? But like I think that it actually does take like 3 or 4 years of working in a lab to actually like be good at like how do you think about research, how do you do that planning, how do you deal with like the uncertainty of things not working, like that training I think is incredibly important, and you don't see that other places in the world, right? Like this is what like everybody's like, oh yeah, like let's just get rid of the universities and like do research in some other organization, and it's like yeah, but like who's going to train the scientists?
That's right. Exactly.
And so like I think that's the really big Chesterton's fence I'd point to. And I'm not saying that like one must have a PhD to do research, but I am saying that doing a PhD tends to correlate, like tends to build the skills that you need to do research in a way that many other things don't.
Makes a ton of sense. This is more like a question from like a humanities nerd like me. And this will likely not lead anyway, but
Okay, I have a degree in
just
history, so I can talk
studying,
about this.
that's right. did studying medieval history actually influence how you approach like research management or really like anything in your career?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean,
Okay, say more.
yeah, I mean, I start with like, what's the history here, right? This is like I one of my complaints about sort of the tech world more broadly. I love all y'all to death, but it's like incredibly ahistorical, right? Where it's like nobody sits down and is like, and there's this tension here because like the only way you can do something that everybody thinks is impossible is by like kind of ignoring the fact that people have tried it and it hasn't worked. But at the same time, I think that there's like you can get a lot of knowledge out of like, okay, like this thing, what
What
have
are
people
the
tried? And
precedents?
yeah, exactly. And like, and I think it's also a really powerful way of like looking at trying to do something that people say is impossible, and you look at it like, okay, like what, why do they say it's impossible? What did people do in the past? Like why is this the way it is? And that can then lead to answers about like, oh, like, well, like this is what I'll do differently. So I
No,
think
just seeing
that,
yourself as like on a longitudinal thread seems like
yeah.
extremely helpful
Also,
transition.
just like looking at the history of things, like you can kind of like, I think that these patterns are useful where if it's like again, everybody can be an exception, but like the more examples you have of people falling into the same trap, like should decrease your confidence that you can be the one that does not fall into that trap, right? So like there's a lot of people who have tried to start the next Bell Labs, right?
That's right.
And this is why I didn't, right? Like people were like, oh, like why don't you just like make a something like Bell Labs? I'm like, well, like maybe I could, but like the Bayesian priors on this are like pretty freaking low, and I don't have a good reason why I will be able to succeed at that when other people won't.
That makes sense. Is there anything else that you'd really like to address that we haven't covered? Like anything that I haven't asked?
Two, well, two, like, I how about I just like drop some things
Drop
that
some
people can like
things.
talk to me about that I like that need to be like full pieces. But like, so the two things that I need to write up, well, three things I need to write up pieces about. One is sort of actually to an earlier question, I want to write up a piece that's basically like in defense of academia, where it's like I feel like everybody, like both inside and outside, like really like to focus on the flaws. But I think that like actually, and this is kind of a historical point, is like pointing out all the things that it does like shockingly well as an institution for like building the modern world,
100%.
I think is worthwhile. It's like okay, what can we actually learn here? Another thing is that I really want to write up this sort of exploration of how the majority, like the shocking thing is that the majority of technological impact on the world's problems and culture is all through second order effects. In the sense that what we usually focus on is you're at Vita DAO, you want to encourage longevity, right? So you're gonna fund a lot of research that's like the goal of this research is to make people live longer in way XYZ. That's like very legible. But I will make a reasonable bet with you that there's going to be some technologies that are made for completely different purposes that end up having a massive impact on the longevity field. I feel fairly confident saying that based on history. And I think that's very under like people that's not intuitive and people don't act on that, right? So it's like So and this is also actually a problem with grants. This goes right back to grants, where it's like grants are this mechanism of like you need to justify to me why this work has to do with something that I care about directly. And I think that is the mode of grants. And I think
Before
that,
moving on, like
yeah.
how would that actually look like actually acting on that awareness of, oh, this thing that I'm building might not make an
I will
artifact.
tell you exactly. So
Love
one of
it.
our
All right.
one of our theses at Fagel Technologies is that one, so like the second order effect is true, and that it's not a complete, it's not like completely random, that there are technologies that tend to have more significant positive second order effects. And those tend to be particularly general purpose technologies, like especially in materials and manufacturing processes. Like that is, so sort of saying like, okay, like you don't know, like obviously you can't know exactly what will have second order effects, but there's sort of like categories of things that tend to have more of these positive second order effects, right? Like
yeah.
You wouldn't think that like a lot of like new materials help with like health or something,
yeah,
but turns out we use stainless, like stainless steel is like pretty incredible for like increasing
yeah.
lifespan,
it's like storing,
right?
Yeah.
Or like figuring out how to do cool stuff with titanium, or
exactly.
Right, like XYZ. But it's like we didn't say like, oh, let's invent stainless steel so we can make like surgical tools. So anyway, so that is how I'm trying to operationalize that.
Yeah. All right. And then there was a third thing, or
the third thing. Yeah. So the third thing is this like hypothesis about that like in very broad, in like a very high level of abstraction, healthy research ecosystems look like a fractal combination of what I call like a bubbling cauldron of decentralized research combined with a mechanism for basically catalyzing strike teams, like very focused directed strike teams. And so I will like leave it at that as kind of like a mystery about like how
it's
to
a
go
good
into
cliffhanger.
Podcasts. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like read the piece when it comes out.
All right, sweet. Yeah, we'll link your blog and all of that.
I'm working on marketing. I'm terrible at marketing. So I'm like trying to be like, ooh.
All the
teaser.
Analogies are spot on. So you got that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for talking today, but
yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. This was fun. Yeah.